Hey, Broker to Broker fans, join us in Irvine, California on March 5th for AIM Activate. It's a brand new interactive experience designed to enhance your marketing skills and grow your business. Come ready to attract, engage, and retain your audience with the help of industry experts and hands-on workshops. Head over to aimgroup.com and register today. Hey, welcome to Broker to Broker. This podcast is all about real talk from one broker to another. Each week, we'll be talking with an AIM member about their journey into the broker channel, their challenges, and unique insights. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome to Broker to Broker, brought to you by AIM, Association of Independent Experts. I am JP Hussey of the Hussey team, Mortgage Advisors. Got my good friend Chris Griffith here today of Debt Does Deals. What's up, buddy?
Hanging out,
looking
man.
Beautiful, man.
It was good cheesecake. Beer to beer. I've got a nice full belly ready to belt.
You
some
got
stuff
abs
with
on
you.
Abs. Let's not lie.
It's all the shivering. Everyone asks what I do to work out. After I got out of the Marine Corps, like nothing. I don't even walk fast.
Well, let's start there. I got a whole little thing here.
Okay, cool. Let's do it.
Number one.
Yeah.
Get serious.
Serious face.
Thank you for your service. Just Veterans Day, right? And honestly, we can't have these talks without guys like you, right? I mean, the freedom to do this type of stuff. I mean, you're all over social, internet, right? A lot of countries can't have that stuff. So, thank you again.
Liberty is something that I think every person has the opportunity to realize the value of, and it's incredible. And I think, thank you, honestly. It was my pleasure. I loved every second of my time in the military, even though it was incredibly challenging, difficult, hard on our family. But there are so many men and women out there that give and certainly have given so much more than me. And you're absolutely right. A lot of people, and this is probably one of the biggest problems out there with a lot of Americans, they have only known liberty. And so some of my favorite people are immigrants because they appreciate liberty so much more because of what you just said, the freedom to say what you think, to express yourself openly without fear of repercussion from a central government that may disagree. Those opportunities are something that each of us have a responsibility to exercise.
Yeah, and this needs to be explained more because I don't think people get it. Like you just said, immigrants are some of your favorite people because they get it.
I do.
They weren't just born into it. We can get into this all day, entitlement, whatever. But that's cool. All right, so that's number one. Number two, Dallas sucks. Go Birds. I had to get into that.
Y'all lost pretty hard, dude. Y'all didn't even show up for that. I was honestly sad for y'all. Y'all usually play us well, even if, like, we're the championship team or whatever
and y'all aren't.
Y'all usually play us strong, but that game, what happened?
But you know it's coming down to the final game of the season.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be, I mean, we're both going to be what, like
8-8?
Y'all
got a super weak schedule with one tough game left. We have a little bit more of a challenge to get there, but I'm still looking forward to the second opportunity this season to rub.
So that's really how we met.
It was.
And we're going to dive into this later about, like we were just talking about, how social media, it's real life.
It's real
right?
life.
We've talked about this before. I think there's a disconnect there of how people see it. But that's how we met, man, was busting balls about Dallas.
Joking on Facebook.
Versus Eagles, man.
Right.
And that's cool. And, like, before we even met, we knew each other. I mean,
again,
these are things I want to dive into later, but it's pretty cool, right?
Incredibly cool functions of social media is that it gives you the opportunity to truly get to know someone, to establish an understanding of who they are, as long as both parties are visible. And so that's the big difference, I think, nowadays, is most people are starting to live out loud on Facebook now, live everything out there, put everything out there, without it being a solicitation or anything. It's just an opportunity to provide visibility. So you do that exceptionally well in social, man. And that was one of the things I saw right off the bat. I was like, a dude.
Well, we
connected
right away.
Yeah.
But it's also the first time you meet someone, too, from social media. You always have that little, like, is this dude real?
Catfishing me? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, 5-6 years ago when I went all in social media, I remember having people come up to me or saying, like, yeah, I'd love to meet you. And then I meet them, like, I didn't realize you were going to be who you are on Facebook or whatever it is. It's nuts, but
a lot of people cannot believe how much just bigger and darker my beard is in reality compared to what they
and
see.
And it's a square. I mean, we can see this, right?
Thor's hammer,
He
baby.
Goes with a square. I'm going for the more of the point. And, I'm itching to shave it, though. Give me some.
Look, manhood's heavy, man. If it gets too much to bear, I guess, you know, put it down. But the way I see it, God gave men beards to differentiate them from women and children, and who am I to spit in his face?
Oh, I love it. All right, let's get into a little bit of the nitty and the gritty. I know you. a lot of people know you out there, but I want to break it down of who you are and where you came from. All right. So you're married, three girls.
Three daughters.
Right. Three daughters. That's
married,
right.
12 years.
12 years.
Coming up on 12.
And you were, I remember a post you had a few months ago. How close do, where do you live now in terms of how close you are to where you grew up?
How far do you live from
home? How far, right? So you're out of, I know, Texas.
Pottsboro, Texas, little bitty town, like 1,400 people or so now. It's a little bigger than when I left it 15 years ago. Lived in a lot of different places, traveled a lot of different places, but that's where I'm back now. I'm actually back in my childhood neighborhood.
Like, yeah, you came full circle, right?
I did.
Because you lived outside Philly for a little bit, right?
Yeah, I lived in Lansdale,
which is 15 miles. Yeah.
Dude, I didn't know what a 7-Eleven Slurpee was until Lansdale. So there's that fondness of Philly, like kind of like the Andy Reid fondness. Just love the dude. So I'm glad he's gone now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I lived in Lansdale for a while, got to experience that young. I still remember some of it. But outside of that, that was my last time up to these parts.
We're going to go off on tangents because now I'm thinking.
Sure.
So I have a bet if Andy Reid will ever win a Super Bowl with Brandon of AIM. I mean, I said no.
You said no?
Now, and then he's like, he's like, he will definitely. But then he came back the next day and said, we have to put a time frame on this. So I'm like, all right, 2 years. And he's like, no. So we have a bet out there. I mean, I just don't think he will, just from being a...
I'm not sure that he will either. I'm not for sure he'll find the right home to do. It's certainly a difficult thing to do.
Yeah. All right, so let's get back. We just went off on our first tangent, but we'll keep it going. Can we go longer than 45 minutes if we have to, Ricky?
All right, and cool. Just cut out all the sucky stuff that we
Yeah, of course, you know, because we don't want to be authentic. We cut off all the bad shit, and we'll be good. All right, let's bring it back. So, three girls. I love it. I follow them on social media. I've never even met your wife or kids, but I know them, which is cool, right? But getting back to, let's say, the mortgage side, I know you come from a family, right, in the finance world. Can you bring us through a little bit of when you got into the business or your family, however you want to take this, to where you're at now?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I came into the business after I was medically retired from the Marine Corps for nothing sexy. Helped a family stand up a company that invests into apartments, which went well. And they invited me out to participate and help build and rebuild their brokerage, which had been decimated by the,
What year was this about, do you think?
Man, they went from a pretty decent-sized brokerage, and then through 08, 09, 10, they just kind of lost a lot of people. It became too challenging. Mm-hmm. Time frames turned, all of that, right? It just became difficult to operate, so they scaled back pretty far. I came in, worked as an LOA for 6 months for my stepfather, who is a guy I would say is a broker's broker, right? He's a guy that understands debt in a lot of different ways as far as what can be done. Even if he doesn't know exactly where, he understands the nature of debt to know if it's something that the markets or capital will tolerate. Mm. And so that's what I learned under. So we were a brokerage, then we went mini correspondent, right, non-delegated.
Got it.
And then after that for a while, we went full delegated. And now they're probably close to being servicing now. I'm not for sure where they're at. We don't talk business a whole lot anymore. But during that process of getting to see all sides of it, I just became incredibly convicted, and all things considered, if I wanted to stand up at the end of the day and said that I do the best thing for my clients that there is to do and not be told I was a hypocrite in a way that I couldn't argue against, I needed to be in the wholesale channel. And it wasn't right for me to try to take the will of my family's company at that point, and they're still growing and building now, and I wish them the best. But it was one of those things where it was like, hey, guys, if y'all want me to continue doing this, then I need the will here. And if I can't have the will here, I get that it's not mine to take. I won't take it, but I want to jump off this side of the ship, swim over that island, and build a little boat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's something that's always stuck out to me about you in terms of and we're going to get to Vetted VA and that, but quality is so important to you. It's not just throwing shit against the wall, seeing what happens, and making some money. Like you have, like you said, yeah, you're married, you got your three girls. I mean, you have very strong opinions of how you want to live your life and helping other people live the life that they want to live. And you want to give everyone that opportunity. That's what sticks out to me. There's so many out there to just throw it up there. And like you're building something which is very tough. And we were talking about, you know, scaling my business. And it's hard to do when you have this opinion of quality, 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 and the consumer first and making sure they're good with this deal that that they're doing in a complex world.
I think what it is, people get so impatient because here's the reality. I've been through 18 months now. I opened my brokerage. We actually filed the paperwork, I think, April 20th last year.
It was a little over a year.
Yeah. Okay. Unintentional, hilarious. Okay. I was in Colorado, so it was an acceptable filing date for the record. Yeah. But a little over 18 months now that we've been building it and growing it. And when I look back in hindsight, like where we're at today versus where we are, it leaps and bounds difference, and it feels so quick, and I've been robbing from the family basket of time and everything else to build it. But the thing out there that most entrepreneurs don't appreciate is how much time will affect what they're doing. You simply have to have time. It's going to take time for you to understand your why, your how, your what, your who, your where, your when, all of those things. And I'm just, I think, a little more patient with it than most people. I focus on quality, on those types of things, because they're the only way that I feel like I can stand up and not be told I'm a hypocrite.
Yeah.
With what I profess to be my purpose for those that I serve. And I'm a feet washer, nothing more, man. I like, bring me your dirty problems. Let me see if I can help, right? Mm-hmm. And so in order to achieve that consistently, if I tell somebody and I set an expectation for them on the biggest thing that they're ever going to do, on the thing that's the lowest common denominator to achieving wealth and prosperity for their family, if I set that expectation improperly, you know who I'm worried about accounting to? Like, God, that's a big ball to be picking up and saying, yeah, I'm the guy. And ultimately, for me, that's what holds me accountable. I try to do right by everyone because I truly believe each person has their unique proposition to this life, their value that they were built for that no one else was. And each person should be pursuing that. So in my lane, left and right lateral limits, I try to help guide everyone to the highest and best possible. I don't see things as good, bad, and ugly, right? I see things as good, better, and best. And I separate those out personally so that I can make certain that I'm trying to focus on achieving the absolute best and not just somewhere decent.
Wow. Yeah, you're not messing around. You don't want some half-assed shit. You're going for it, man.
I am. It's important to me to do things right. I don't think where you end up in life matters as much as how you got there and what you did along the way and who you got to affect. For me, I think a lot of people in this life want to be harvesters, and they want to reap these big fields of cool grain that looks sexy when the combine is like blowing it. Like, man, you know what I'm a 4-foot rake plow. I need 8 tires and a big motor and an empty field full of hard clawed rocks and stuff, and I need everyone out of my way, and I just want to plow the field.
Yeah, make sure you cut that one out, Ricky. No, I like that one. I need
honestly,
that on the wall.
Honestly, man, I like plowing dirt. That's my personality type. It's the only thing that keeps me from getting bored. When I'm bored, I'm a boy. I kill, destroy, and break things, right? Like, I have to be engaged, and for me, that's how I do it. I look for the hardest, difficult problems that people don't like to address because it's not glorious, and that's where I seek to be different. I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. No, I love it, man. I love it. Yeah. What about? I mean, we're not really in the weeds of the mortgage stuff yet because I came on here hoping to have more of a philosophy type conversation with you, right? And that's where we're getting to. Getting into, like, you could, whether it's mortgages or not, you'd be doing something that still goes back to what your core values are.
It would have to be.
It would have to, or you can't even live, you know?
Yeah.
What I know you brought it back to what God has for you, but is there a couple things you could tell people of how to figure out your core values? Like, did the Marine Corps help you out with that?
The Marine Corps absolutely helped me out with it. The Marine Corps helped me out in so many of the things in life, growing up, becoming a responsible man, understanding what responsibility is in a way that doesn't alleviate you of responsibility precisely when you should be accepting it, because that's what a lot of leaders think it is. And more importantly, I learned how to lead my peers, not how to lead my juniors or boots or troops, but how do I lead a group of my peers? Right? Because that's much more difficult because they understand you. They understand your flaws. They understand your faults. Mm-hmm. They understand your pride, your ego. They understand why they follow you also still. But you have to have an understanding and accounting for each of those. So while most people in their life simply seek out their passion, what are they the best at? I started checking off the things off the list. Like, what do I suck at? What do I not need to touch? What do I not need to do either because I'm not interested in it, right? Or that's not my skill set. I'm a bit a squirrel, right? Mm-hmm. Like I've been all over the place, and it helps me in the macro space that I think and problem solve in, but in operational capacities, right? Checklist, 1, 2, 3 orderings. It's not that I can't follow and make myself abide by those. It's just it's so incredibly difficult because that's not the way my brain works.
Yeah, I've talked with a lot of people, and there's nothing wrong with this, about finding your strengths, right? That right. You're kind of the opposite a little bit from what you're saying. Like, all right, here are my strengths. I'm going to write them down. I guess it's the same thing. Then they're finding out what they're not good at, and they're hiring for those type
of things.
If you
can write down on a list on a notepad on all of the things that you shouldn't be doing with your time, and then
that's where
as you're looking at that notepad, seeing how often you're doing those things, those are the things that I look to affect change to first, because in my opinion, those were the biggest liabilities. Mm. They were the things that I was spending a lot of time on that I shouldn't be in one way or another, and why shouldn't I be? That was my determination based off of everything, and I have to affect change there. It's not... So many people focus on the other side of the coin, right?
Right.
How do I get better? Well, stop doing things you suck at.
Yeah, let's make it that
focus
simple.
Focus on the worst 5 instead of what your best 5 are, right? And figure out those and how to offset and improve those, because if you can do that, your average will get better, and then you naturally are going to be left with a list of things that you should be doing. And that's kind of how it worked for me. A lot of people come up and they're like, man, you have some really cool brands you're building and this, mm-hmm. that, and the other. And like Josh Pitts was the first to say it. And I'm like, well, Josh, what's my brand? And he's like, well, it's yeah. You.
Damn right.
And so I didn't realize that brands could be such a personal thing. And for me in my life, like everyone knows, if you follow me on social media, I have you keep it cool on my page because my grandma's on my social media. Mm-hmm. My kids may be on my social media.
That's right.
And other people that I don't appreciate dropping F-bombs around all the time, even though I know what the smoke pit's like. I understand how the boys
yeah.
talk. But there's a time and place for everything, right?
Yeah.
And so I try to make certain that my brands show the same personal accountability that my individual person does, right? Because that's what consumers want to trust. They want to trust a person, not a
yeah.
opaque brand.
Is that hard to mix?
It's incredibly hard.
Personal and business all in one. That's how I'm
it's
living
so
right now, wherever
different.
I go.
Me too, man.
I was speaking to my accountant yesterday, and like, all right, we're looking at what you can write off, this, and that. It was a great meeting. I owed a lot less than I thought, and we still made some good money, so that's a whole nother thing. But I'm like, bro, I'm like, everywhere I go, whatever I do is business. Like, I'm not BSing you. Like, everything yeah. I do. But it's hard. Like, can you touch on that when you mix everything?
Yeah, I would say that you have to get to a point to where you are, like, I have 3 daughters and a wife. I am comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I am comfortable having multiple people, eyes, ears, holding me accountable all of the time. They're actually, in the way that I build my circles and interactions, I put people in place to hold me accountable because I trust their common reactions more so than my own internal thoughts sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So... As far as, what was the question again? I got a little too far.
I don't know. Where are we right now? Are we in AIM?
Oh, man. Is it hard?
It, yes.
Is it hard? Yes. Because you have to be vulnerable. There's stuff I share out there, and there's people that comment some things behind the scene or that comment publicly, and I address it behind the scenes or something, because you have to be willing to share enough of yourself for people to really feel like they know you and can relate to you.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that opens you up to criticism, critique.
Which is hard, like, for people to take, man.
Yeah, right. And outside of that, people knowing who your kids are, this, that, and the other. That's why I'm very quick to tell them after I show them a picture of my kids with a snake. I also tell them that all 3 of my daughters have killed deer. I've got multiple mm-hmm. guns everywhere, and I'm not afraid to kill things when they need to be killing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so there's a measure of accountability given and provided constantly across all of it. And it may seem like sometimes maybe I'm waxing metaphor or being, I don't know, a little... You know, off in the weeds or something, but it's all purposeful in my opinion. But for me personally, my business is me. It's an extension of me, of mm-hmm. who I am. People trust my business. Even before I started Debt Does Deals or whatever, they don't remember the company name as often as they remember who you are.
Yeah.
Like now they're starting to remember some of the company stuff, which is cool, but that only happens when they trust
mm-hmm.
the culture, the person. Like a culture is something a company can have, but only when individuals instill it.
Mm.
Right.
Say that one more time.
Culture is something a company can have, but only when individuals instill it.
Boom.
It comes from people. It's a human quality and capacity, not a corporate one. Corporate adopts that and mimics it so that the consumer, the individual, trusts it. And so for all of you out there building brands, if you're not comfortable giving all of yourself to public visibility on some of those things, you may have difficulty. Now, it's plenty that do it in other ways, but mm-hmm. with the way that culture is going, social media works because people have always wanted to interact with other people, right? They preferred it. Storytelling, mm-hmm. right? Even before writing happened, people still prefer to tell stories back and forth. So they want to be able to interact with professionals, get value from them, understand who they are, and choose them when they so need to,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I think that's why it works for me on social, is because people don't mind picking me because I've given them enough evidence to decide whether or not they want to
me. Yeah, you've kind of broken through. It takes time. Like, when you decide I'm going to go on social media, or like, it takes time for people to trust who you are. And you have to
be patient. Distance and direction, man. You have to show those three things to them. They want to see time, distance, and direction.
Okay. I stopped. So I learned this from Scott last week, who we were hanging out with, right?
Bywise Mortgage.
Yes.
If you're down in Southern California, those guys
Scott Chang.
Are. Oof.
I
good.
Stopped calling anything I do marketing. It's only messaging. Yeah. He brought that up. I'm like, get out of here. So we don't have a marketing department, even though that's me anyway. It's messaging. Yeah. We're delivering a message to everyone out there.
I agree
of
with
what
you
100%. We are, right?
It's all copy of you're trying to share your voice, your story, and all of that. I don't use email for anything. Like, I make my clients a promise: follow me on a social platform, and I'll never send you another email again.
Yeah, you don't do any blast emails.
No,
none of that BS.
The only thing they get from me proactively is value propositions. Right? I think HomeBot's a great partner for that,
yep.
with the value that they're actually providing. That's not just superficial kind
it's
of
a lot
brand.
Of shiny objects out there. I
there
feel
are.
Like that's one of them. We just
that's
dropped
one of
it.
Them, and there are a lot of different. Programs and things that you can pay for, I would say, that are perfectly valid and work really well. But if you don't utilize them systematically, they become shiny, expensive objects mm-hmm. as well. So my platform was I wanted to interact it with like a social CRM effect. And then I don't want to completely get rid of email, but I don't want to push anything that isn't organic video
Love
content
it.
That I create or, right, strictly value to the consumer. And so I got on HomeBot personally as like a consumer for 4 or 5 months, and I found that even in my 400 email clean out in the mornings, I'd check that email out. And I thought, mm-hmm. okay, if it's getting my attention here, then maybe it's worth looking at.
Do you struggle at all with maybe a loaded question, with automation? Because it can be so not personal.
Incorrect.
Incorrect.
It can be incorrect. It can be not personal. It can be perceived as spam, right? That's what we don't want to be doing. We don't want to be spamming anybody. The reality is, if you, like, even for people listening into this podcast, I guarantee you a couple of them have already clicked off and like, oh, man, this Chris guy speaking sounds like spam.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Someone's going to think something's spam. But if I truly think it's valuable to them, they know me well enough to know I'm not just pushing it out just to fill the, you know, the time block or to fill their email mm-hmm. with garbage. I'm trying to get them information that I think's valid. The automation provides difficulty because you have to have layering of security to ensure the information's accurate, right? There's not an evaluation tool out there outside of actually a real estate agent or someone with access to comparable mm-hmm. properties, assessing each individual characteristic of the house. There's not a good automation tool yet for valuation. Right. And that was one of the things identified with it. But they're getting very close, and they're going to get better.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot. Like, we put our database in the HomeBot, and we're like, oh, just check it out. And, hey, this isn't the value of my house. I'm like, oh. So I had to start writing some, not scripts, but we had to get back to each person individually. I'm like, all right, well, here's one of my good real estate partners if you want to check it out. But appraisals really, you know.
That's what I'm going to use. A lot of that is setting expectation ahead of the time. So I tell them up front, hey, I've got a tool that provides you a good overview. It's not perfect. Everything still requires human touching to make sure, right, to vet something truly. You still have to have that human touch on it. But this is about as close as automation is getting right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to at least get you what the best the market has to offer.
Yeah.
So if you have any questions or if something doesn't seem right, give me a call. We'll double check it. It's not going to cost you anything. And then you'll know for sure.
But if it doesn't work, then we'll step it back. But at least you're laying it out up front.
And if you set that up in a 30-second video to them before they get content like that, then you've set expectation before they determine it for themselves. And that's a lot of the problem that industry professionals, loan officers, broker owners have, mm-hmm. right? Even some of the vendors rolling out programs and products are setting expectation in a mm-hmm. manner that's not quite achievable. And your consumer feels that. Everyone feels it. It's easy to see because we've all been there. So I try to be ultra conservative in each and every expectation I set, just simply so I can overachieve it.
Yeah. Whew. That's a lot. How'd you become so good at talking? Like, is that that's just one of your things, right?
I've had a lot of practice, man. I've been running these words at this rate for minutes since I was probably about 2 years old. Used to drive my folks crazy. Every single teacher I've ever had in my life's been nuts. Didn't do very well in the Marine Corps with it because they don't like it.
They don't like it
a lot. But I never learned any different, so.
So going back to culture quick, how, this is another loaded question, but how big's too big for when your culture can start suffering?
I don't think that there is a...
There isn't one.
There isn't that, first of all. I think it all depends on the leadership that you have that instills it, the humans that adopt it, internalize it, and that begin to profess it naturally, right? Like, you're never going to get a referral from a family planning office so you can get help for a divorce from any person in my company. We'll give you a referral to a marriage counselor that mm-hmm. I personally use and trust, but... Right, there's certain cultural things that I'm not going to take part in, and everyone in my company knows how I am when I put a foot down.
Mm-hmm.
Right, sometimes even if it lands in my mouth.
Sure,
but either way, the foot goes down the same, and that's the way that it needs to be. And the moment I think that you begin to concess on the things that you find relevant for your culture, the things that you think are important for humans to have, both ethically, morally,
yeah,
right, to abide in the community that we all have properly, respectfully of the other individuals with liberty that you're encountering. When your culture begins to, like, you're not achieving it, I think that's too big, and that's the simply the place that people need to be okay with slowing it down. Like, there's so many companies growing so much faster than my mortgage company
right
now. That's a great
point.
And it's hard. Because I'm a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you and I walk outside and take a leak in the cold right now, I'm going to try to pee farther than you. It's just a thing.
I'm a good peer, bro.
I'm just saying.
We
can table this one, or we can go downstairs and come back and finish after. But
Ricky,
but that's how, that's how it is, man. I'm really competitive, so it's been difficult watching some of my peers, which I know, love and respect all of them. They know it. It's not an unhealthy
competition. I get
it. It's like Tyler Hodgson and myself doing the pull-up competition, right? Like, Marines compete in a healthy manner, and it's actually something that creates camaraderie,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's the way that I like it here. So it's been difficult when I've seen a lot of my peers grow in different ways, and they all have different missions and stuff. But for me, there are certain things that I've held super, like, death grip on, and maybe even throttled back a little bit to ensure, just to make sure. Not that I might not have achieved it or anything else, but it's so incredibly important for me to deliver on my expectation I'm setting for people. And culture is one of those things that you just don't rebound from.
You can't.
Right? Like, when we're talking about culture and you have things in your company that culturally cause problems, like, it's like infidelity in a marriage or mm-hmm. over drinking, maybe, like a big type of problem that it's hard to rebound back from. It takes three times the effort to come back from than it does to avoid in the first place. So for me, it was like, okay, I know what a Texas two-step is. Let's see if we can just do this with a waltz.
Well, that's why a lot of people, way in the past, you know, early 2000s or when, you know, the quote-unquote crash happened, you remember all the companies that had one name? They had very vague names. I want to get into the names too of companies.
Yeah.
It's very vague. There's something wrong with it, but once their culture or their reputation went south, let's just get
change
rid of that
name.
One. Let's change the name.
And that's
like, come on, like
well, marketing is the way that corporations I think try to highlight and show culture that may not really be there.
Mm.
Honestly, that's what a lot of marketing is, and that's why a lot of the younger generations know what an ad is versus what a real person with a real opinion.
Well, there's
is.
The marketing versus messaging, right there.
Right.
I mean, draw a line right there, you know?
Crushing it.
Well, I mean, the name of your company's Debt Does Deals.
Yeah.
I mean, that couldn't be more in your face of what you're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, 88% of home buyers used a mortgage
I mean, you're
to
all
finance
in.
Their home last
you're
year.
You're all in. You're not like...
No.
So you have to protect the house, your culture,
right.
Everything, because of your name.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the first step. Like, here's my values. Here's what we're naming it.
And with
I can't
a name
come
like
back.
That, if I'm not able to establish and instill a certain thing. So, like, one of the things that I'm big on, there are a lot of mortgages that can be done that, in my personal opinion, probably shouldn't yet. And now this is a difficult part where you get into morality or what's ethical or not.
Mm-hmm.
I never want to deny a consumer, and I won't deny a consumer. There are certain things that we don't excel at and other people may be better at, so I try to refer in those circumstances. But every one of my clients know when something can be done and shouldn't. And I talk to them about that. Like, look, can you make homeownership a reality now? Probably. Is it going to be brutal? Probably. But
mm-hmm.
what would be better? And I think better than being reactive and trying to get the now thing, because of the way debt works specifically, it's a currency that's only valued in hindsight, right? You have to plan to use it. Most people don't know how to plan with debt. So
mm-hmm.
you know what they do? They save money and hope. That's a crappy strategy. Mm-hmm. So for Debt Does Deals, with the culture, with the things that I'm trying to accomplish, a lot of the time for me, it's important when I see those clients that are close to where, like, obtaining home ownership and maintaining home ownership are two different things. Obtaining home ownership when you're not assured or likely to be able to maintain home ownership is actually something. Well, you get into that Texas two-step, wow, don't you?
Right.
You lose a little ground. And so that process can be taxing, emotionally taxing, financially taxing, right, and can actually cause more harm. So oftentimes I'm a bigger fan of showing a person how to best set themselves up so that the thing that they're looking to accomplish, right, home ownership, is actually supplied in a way they can maintain and actually get the value from. Houses should make people wealthy. All the data proves it. Census came out in the last report and said 80 times. Homeowners are 80 times wealthier than renters. Mm. And everyone wants to argue correlation or causation. If I told you you were 80 times more likely to get salmonella in this chair than that chair, what chair are you going to sit in?
Sitting in the one with not the salmonella.
Even if it's a right, it's just such a stupid big number, there's no way you're playing those odds. But renters don't think about that. Debt is the way that most people accomplish homeownership, and there's a way to use debt that's a lot safer than money.
Yeah, well, that's where I want to go next then, right? You are, if not the biggest, one of the biggest veteran advocates right now, whether it's with financing or just being an advocate of vets, right? The VA loan, on a surface level, 100% financing. That's not much money out of pocket.
No.
I've seen it on social media. I've seen everywhere. It's not good for the veteran if they're not putting money into it. Right?
How's that? Show me the default numbers for the last 5 years. You know
exactly.
What? VA loans have led the way with the lowest default risk. And over the recent history, a decade or two, they're only marginally second to conventional loans that have much higher, by stereotypical standards, of what it takes to assure a mortgage.
Why do you
risk.
Think that is, though?
Well, I think it has to do with a lot of things. Right off the bat, outside of getting out of all the facts and numbers and math
right.
to the equation, because a lot of the things with a VA loan are considered more risky, yet they're not in hindsight. And I think a lot of it has to do with the veteran mentality, right? Like, you won't find Marines looking for a place to retreat,
right?
Locate, close with,
that.
Destroy the mm-hmm. enemy, right? Like, you're going to move forward. And a lot of veterans understand responsibility, like I spoke about earlier. They understand what it is to be responsible. They understand where bucks stop rolling and where they're the ones that has to put the rubber to the road mm-hmm. to make it happen. And so I think a lot of the time, that veteran mentality may be one of the reasons likely that VA loans have a lower default risk. I think veterans are willing and able to obligate themselves differently. And maybe just have a little more stick-to-itness. But that could be a biased opinion, too. So,
yeah, but that's where I wanted to get, of why you think those individuals, without putting much into a loan, still have the lowest default rate, right? But what I've also seen with you, knowing who you are and your personality, you're also studying your craft. You're throwing out numbers. You're reading statistics that are legit. And knowing you, not want to be a hypocrite, you're looking at this shit.
Oh, yeah.
And you're throwing it out there. Like,
you know how many people want to knock me off a Facebook hill
of
some type, wherever
you're
I happen
ready.
To be standing?
You're ready
I
for what
I could be standing
in
a low point, and people are walking up to me looking mm-hmm. to knock me over from something. And I love that. Here's why I love that, man. I need in my life things to hold me accountable incredibly differently because of who I am. And I know that, and I love it. Mm-hmm. And so to have that constant likelihood of someone objecting to or needing to see how or why I've reasoned to a certain place, it causes me to be hypercritical. I've always been hypercritical of myself. I have a wife and three daughters, right? And I come back to that all the time, but because I think it's a little bit different. They have different expectation of me than a son may, right? Mm-hmm. Like daughters do. And I love that. I love being accountable to things. I love having to make certain of things and to being able to stand up and say yes or no, right? Mm-hmm. And with conviction. And right, wrong, or indifferent, because sometimes it doesn't work out, right? That's the nature of it, too.
Sure.
Like, it's important. You have to get to that place.
Yeah, selfishly, I always say, if I didn't have my two boys and my baby girl, I'm probably the laziest person you'll ever meet. But if I didn't have my values or things I have to do for my clients or my family, like, I'd just be laying around watching TV.
I would not be out fishing and hunting.
Well, you'd be
Everyone's
fishing
like,
and hunting. Same, right.
Right, it's like, and that's another thing, that whole all-in mentality to, you know, Bill Hart's an awesome guy, and his all-in mentality is mm-hmm. incredibly important. But for me, That's what it is, too. There's no backup plan. Like, I'm willing to go all in on my business.
Right.
I'm willing to take every bit of profit, double down on what I've said, what I claim, what I'm trying to accomplish. Because at the end of the day, two reasons. One, I'll never know if I don't. And that's more aggravating for me than anything. And two, like, I remember what being broke was like. I had more time to fish and hunt. Like, bring that back. So, come on, shut up.
Yeah, either way,
threaten me with a good time.
Can you tell us a bit more about Vetted VA and what you've started? I mean, it's on social media. It, you know, it's a group.
So Vetted VA right now is predominantly on Facebook. It is a group on Facebook that allows veterans to come in and vet or verify any specific piece of information, any offer, any claim or thought that they have about their VA home loan in a manner that will not solicit them. It's a way for them to verify something. It's incredibly important. No one trusts something when there's a strong motivation to sell you. Right? No one wants to be sold. They want to choose for themselves. And if you can simply provide opaque, true, honest value to consumers and to people in a way that they can decide easily for themselves, it's really empowering. So Vetted VA was a way for me to overcome a couple problems. One, the VA home loan is being pilfered by bad actors, and the bad loans that they created have literally harmed veterans by reducing the capability of their VA home loan. Now, with the VA funding fee increasing to cover veteran health benefits, because I'm not for sure how those correlate, that piece, and then also when they're looking to cash out over 90% loan to value, we carry a heavy brick in our pack now to accomplish that, because bad actors created and sold loans that shorted investors who were later appeased by Jenny in order to make sure the entitlement still existed, even though it was the safest default-ridden free, you know. And 2008 happened, just for everyone out there, because bad lending practices created loans and pulled them in a way that the markets would not manage. And it was known that it was happening, but it wasn't dealt with until a reactive nature later. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what just happened with loan churning. Because it wasn't something that was being dealt with proactively, it was dealt with reactively. The consumer was the one that was harmed. A couple lenders who were still volume leaders were fined a little bit, and investors are happy now too. So is that right? No.
No.
It's wrong. And that's the kind of stuff that Vetted VA intends to change. I want to replace bad actors with people that have ethics, people that have culture, people that have responsibility and understand what it means to truly serve their consumers and not have their consumers serve their corporate shareholders or pockets or one or the other. Doing the right thing, good, better, best, doing the best thing, right? And that's what Vetted VA is out to change. I've created it out of a personal need, as you know, man. I was in the beginning of the year, so many veterans were coming out to me and said, hey, man, how do I find like someone like you over in Wisconsin?
Yep.
And so I would have to find someone like me and ask them questions and ask them where they were sitting and their experience and literally vetting them out in the way that I know how to.
You'd vetted me out.
I did. Almost.
Like when we met, you're like, oh, this. And I'm like,
dude, you've crushed several people I've sent up your way, bro.
Yeah. I mean, and to get back, not to take you off of Vetted VA, but would you say this group could help out anyone, whether they're a vet or not? Because there's just the regular consumer out there that the same thing could be happening.
Absolutely.
Depending.
And we're working on a couple of other pages. I think it's really important for brands to think like Chick-fil-A. And here's what I mean. Okay. When's the last time you went to Chick-fil-A to get a pizza?
Not on Sunday.
Have you ever asked them? Have you ever asked them at the window, hey, can I get a burger?
No.
Have you ever asked them, hey, do y'all have nachos?
No.
No, you drive there for a chicken with some bread and a pickle.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe cheese. I like cheese. Mm-hmm. Right? You drive there for specific reasons. And consumers with as much content and as many groups and those things are out there, they need a very laser-specific purpose, I think, in each group. But building advocacy groups for different types of consumers is something I want and working on. But it takes people, right? And so sometimes saying yes when you should say no. Like, there's a lot of things that I work with.
No,
I've started with veterans, and here's why I've started with veterans. Out of all consumers that are identifiable by class in the U.S. mortgage market today, I do not think that there is another class of consumer that is more often targeted for exceptional profiteering. Look at the percentage of profit that these companies are making on VA loans compared to any other type of mortgage, FHA, USDA, conventional, the percentage VA, they're making more, right? So they're the most targeted, easily identifiable, most profited from. They're discriminated against by ignorance from listing agents that were in their prime back in 90s, like their business card photo suggests. And they say things like, oh, the VA appraisal process is difficult. It's the only appraisal process that gives you a proactive opportunity to actually influence value, but whatever, ignorant person.
Sure.
right? And they say other things like, oh, VA loans take longer, 30 days or less all day. I don't even care if it's in Montana where I've got a two-week appraisal turn time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you know what you're doing, the VA loan is not only the most efficient mortgage in the U.S. market, but it's one of the easiest to work with. Has some of the easiest underwriting requirements, right? Has some of the most flexible terms with regard to credit.
And the best income, people to work with.
Right, and they're people that, for the sake of arguing here for a second, for everyone listening, a VA benefit is earned contractually by obligating every aspect of your individual person that has liberty to mm-hmm. no longer have that liberty as an individual, but to yield it over to what an entity says you can have. And by doing that for a period of time, right, which is described in what it takes to earn a VA home loan entitlement, those obligations are provided contractually. So if anyone wants to argue the case for having the rights to a mortgage, like, there's there any other that contractually earned benefit to a mortgage? Like, I don't know. Like, is it fair? Is it unfair? I think it's fair, but that's because a lot of the difficult, individual, unique problems veterans face that a lot of other consumers don't, having to deal with credit when you're overseas in a place where you don't have a phone.
100%.
And you need to make a payment, right? There's like all kinds of stuff that veterans face that other consumers won't. Income. What much money an E1, E2 makes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's just so many things that I think it's great that the veterans have a specific home loan to help them achieve home ownership, because it's such an incredibly important thing for individuals who have never had wealth before. All the studies prove it. So all the programs exist to try to create and establish with longevity homeowners, because the data proves if you make them a homeowner for 10 years, you put some money in their pocket and they might not take as much from the state. People need to be buying homes.
Yeah, I'll get back to that again. So you're saying making people homeowners actually makes the government, I mean, for lack of better terms or being a simpleton here, more money or saves them money.
I bet you could show it with the data. I don't have all the access to that.
I'm not going to put you that hardcore.
But here's the thing I do know. Every single one of my clients that have been homeowners for 10 years, do you know how many of them are on some type of subsidy?
None.
No, a lot of them have realized massive $100,000 gains. My first house mm-hmm. bought for $332 with a zero-down VA loan. Sold it 5.5 years later for $810.
Boom.
Entire life changed. One house, zero down, VA.
That's why you're so passionate. I mean,
it changed my life.
You understand it's not going to be perfect for everyone because you can't control the whole market, but you're putting people in the best position to.
Right, and I show them how I did it. I identified market, location, acquisition metrics, rehab potentiality, sell opportunities, and when and how and if and what you use to determine those, the books that teach each some of those processes, right? And I've even put my content videos out there to show what I specifically look at. Mm-hmm. Because homes, if you understand what causes real estate values to increase or decrease, like all of the different variables, you can begin to time them like watching the tides in the ocean when you want to watch your boat. And so reliably, I think homes should achieve wealth creation, especially for families that have never had it.
They just don't know.
They just don't know. Or debt's not a currency that's taught, though, brother. Mm-mm. It's not. Where do you go to learn about debt? I started talking about debt, and everyone's
still. Debt's a bad thing.
Every mortgage person out there still looks at me half cross-eyed when I talk about debt being a good thing, right? But it can be. I equate debt to fire, okay? Would you get rid of every single device in your home that could potentially cause fire? Every heating element, every light bulb, every look at of electricity, socks on your carpet, because static electricity, buddy, that could light an ember in the carpet, right? Would you get rid of every potentiality of fire in your house just because it could burn it down?
No.
No. You have things. You have smoke detectors, right? You have safety cutoffs. You have fire extinguishers. You got a water hose. And you got a wife that can smell smoke 2 days before it starts burning anyways.
Right.
So you begin to apply risk-abating variables and factors to secure it so that you can have the benefit of the thing, the leverage that makes your life better. Fire is a leverage tool, right? Mm-hmm. It helps you to leverage things like raw pork. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I simply think that if everybody understood what really securitizes and makes debt safe, they might have a different opinion of it. Right, a lot of people think equity in a home, right? 20% down. If you got it, you better put it down. Equity is going to make you safe. No, it doesn't. It makes the lender safer. It makes the 100%. Equity makes the lender safer. It does not make the borrower safer.
Right. This gets back to a
20% of reserves in your checking account that's exclusively exists only in case you have a disruption of income. Then you have 20%, right? A year worth of mortgage payments in reserve. That makes debt safe because now you have debt maintenance or the ability to continue maintaining your debt obligations even when you have a disruption to income, because you're going to. You are going to have a disruption to your income. it's going to happen to everybody, or you're going to have an abnormal expense, right? And so you have to prepare for those natural common breakdowns, and reserves or liquidity is the thing that will make, I think, for the borrower debt the most safe, right? To expend all of that 20%, that entire chunk that you've saved all up at your life to abate $100 a month, $200 mm-hmm. a month, when that same 20% represents 15 years worth of that $200 a month, and it doesn't make you safer to give it to them. You have to qualify if you want to try to get mm-hmm. it back out later, but you can't now because that's expensive, or doesn't it? Like, right. it doesn't help people. But so many people out there think in ways that are not consistent with how the instrument and currency of debt work.
Why do you think that is? It's just bad information?
Because people don't understand it. People believe foolhardy statements like this. Money makes the world go round. No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Money, they ain't have money to spend the globe, like, even around the 100 wheel on the Price is Right. The economies were connected with debt. Debt is the currency that concerns the future, and debt is the thing that makes the world spin. Not money.
Debt does deals.
Boom.
You lay it right on the table, man.
I used to walk into listing agents' offices and ask them that. I'd be like, I've got a coffee cup here. If you answer my question right, you can have it. Does money make the world go around? And they'd say yes.
Yes.
And I then ask them, awesome, how many cash deals did you do last year? 3. Wow, what a crap year you had. And they get offended, and they're like, no, ooh. I did 28 sides. I'm like, how on earth did you do 28? Yeah. You just said you did 4 cash deals last year. Well, they have mortgages. Oh, so money makes the world go around, but for you, your clients, your listing agents, everyone else, debt was actually the thing that made it go around last year. Mm-hmm. But you think money makes the world go around. It's not. Debt's the thing that's going to put your butt on the couch.
Is there another, this is getting back to thinking about how vets have, I hate saying, but it's true, taken advantage of in our industry, right? Is there any other industries you can call out that have done the same thing? I mean,
yeah, I think there are. There are a lot of industries out there right now offering for veteran VA disability benefits, or offering essentially payday loans for years worth of those in advance at like interest rates of 240% and stupid. So they're basically encumbering these veteran VA disability benefits with a loan and a capital need, right? This is bad debt.
Really?
This is debt that harms the consumer. Debt's like fire. It's not good or bad. It can be both. It's inanimate. Good and bad is a mm-hmm. term used to describe humans, not inanimate objects or things like debt. So that type of debt is one that's actually encumbering their long-term benefit and gets to the point to where the cost of maintaining that debt are likely to cause them to lose the benefit altogether. And so that's a great example of industry right now, I think, that's really targeting veterans in a harmful way. I'm not for sure what protected class, if anything, would do to help on items like that, but they are things that if whoever's supposed to be responsible for these things don't start understanding who's taking advantage of them and how, then there are going to be a lot of weight society has to carry that they might not like.
Yeah, as much as we may or may not like regulation, right? I mean, you need it in certain, look at the auto industry. Look at this industry you're talking about. There's not much regulation on them right now. You need something, not. Right?
I'm more of a libertarian than anything.
I know you are. Right.
I prefer liberty in its most raw forms, mm-hmm. but I think regulation should simply be used to protect, right? And there is a lot of perception-based thoughts around the word protect. What's protecting? What's hovering? What's all of that stuff, right? But when regulations exist that prevent harm, and you can show with data that that's been accomplished, or is going to be accomplished, and then after actually show that it was accomplished, mm-hmm. I think that they have a valid discussion in the conversation, honestly. Now, as far as whether that makes them regulations that we should pursue in and of itself, no, it doesn't. Because there are things that I think that certainly shouldn't be regulated, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot regulate morality. You cannot regulate ethics. They've tried. It just simply doesn't work. So there are things when it comes to overcharging, especially when all of these loans and stuff are monitored, right? And the VA aggregates all the data. Yeah. They have the lender scorecards to show mm-hmm. what your average was. So if the VA can look out there and say, wow, we've got veteran brokers out there generating loans 1.5% to 2% lower than the interest rate than these bigger shops are, maybe this is going to cause a problem with the entitlement. Duh, because each and every one of these mortgages are a hostage EPO waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. And so they declare the 210-day minimums, and they do all of these things to try to stop the investor from being shorted because the bad actors are still acting.
Wow. That's a lot right there.
It's true. There's nothing changed. They're just doing it differently. They're targeting more. They went from...
I mean, it's so complex, yet so simple. When you break it down.
Like, if you originate a cost mortgage up here, and par is really down here, that's harmful.
Well, let's... I mean, we have 10, 15 minutes left, but what... And we know what you're trying to do for the industry, right? But let's be realistic. Where do you see the industry... And you can break it down if you want into the VA sector if you want, but where do you see it go? Like, how long is it going to take? Like, where do you see the industry in 2 years?
This is hard.
It's hard. I keep saying, like, I'm setting groundwork, and this is a tough morality type thing as well, but I feel like I'm setting the groundwork with what I'm trying to do with my business, what you're trying to do, and I keep saying, I'm going to be dead.
I can answer your question.
You know what I mean? Like,
if I thought... Like, most people that were in my position, I think, would probably turn Vetted VA into a brokerage that does VA mortgages, especially with the bandwidth and traction. But you know how much of an effort by percentage I could change for veterans if I did that? Like, a very minuscule margin.
Right.
I would be a hypocrite in my statement of wanting to have impact. So more than converting that brand into something like Debt Does Deals, where do I see us in 2 years? I see us in 2 years to a place to where those who have a true brand, something that really does something different for the consumer and something that unites people all over the place to accomplish the same mission, I think that's something that even though we're going to an automated kind of a market and you have so many fintech companies out there, I think that's something that has longevity. And so for me, Vetted VA began a process of, okay, how do I not capture these people? How do I win hearts and minds and convert every one of these into fighters? How do I make all of these individuals terrorists that can impact and attack the current mortgage market to cause better changes, right? I mean, unconventional warfare tactics, right? Mm-hmm. Whack-a-mole style, whatever. But Vetted VA was my way of taking and finding all of the professionals that I can nationally that do the best thing, not the good thing, but the best thing each and every time. They know what they're doing, and uniting them under a banner that truly represents to the consumer in a way that's not pay-to-play or pilfering of a brand, right? But to truly represent and serve those highest and best needs. And by doing that, maybe then I can make a change in the industry. Now, it's not a profitable thing. It actually distracts me from the profitable things I do quite a bit. But I love it. Veterans need someone to fight for them. And most people are too busy trying to fight in this life to get by. We all do that sort of a thing, too. But I like fighting, I guess, more than most.
Yeah, but what I also get from you is, obviously, listen, you're a vet. That's what you're passionate about. But I'm bringing it back full circle to what we talked about in the beginning, your core values. Like, you're using this platform because that's where you're comfortable to make it better for everyone else, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds so complex, but it's not really. That's what I get out of you going full circle. Like, you have core values that has nothing to do with the veteran community.
Yeah.
Right?
You're right.
But that's a way to... To be there, I hate using the word use, but it's who you are. Like,
yeah,
you know, I'm a golfer. I'm not a golfer. You know, maybe I'll try and fight you with a 9-iron, but if that's something I'm passionate about, maybe I would use that to get into this to make the greater good better.
It's easy to be something to be used.
I'm trying not to label you.
No,
what I'm trying to do.
I don't mind being labeled. I think it's probably a good thing for people to try to figure out who I am. Let me know if you
all
do.
Good.
By the way,
yeah.
But I think it's something that's easy to be used. Most people, I think, when they stand up in official capacities or professional capacities to claim one thing, and that's why they're better able or whatever to suit people. I've never claimed to be a VA expert. Mm-hmm. I've never claimed to be a guru. I've never claimed to be the best broker, the best loan officer, the best human being. I've never claimed any of those things. I've simply claimed that I will own the responsibility of attempting and striving to achieve higher. I will own more of the space that's harder to own by holding myself accountable to it than anyone. And that's all I'm trying to do. I will get better every single day. I will find one more loan officer that can help out X more number of vets in that location. And I simply won't settle for less because I know I've learned over 34 years back to what my dad taught me when I was little. Son, you can do anything you put your mind to, right? And that was mostly true. I very seriously doubt I could put my mind into being a star left tackle for the NFL. Yeah.
Well, right. It's right? Cliche,
so there
but
are
it's
some
true.
Things that yeah. are you are not incapable or you're not capable of. They're just not realistic. So anything in my life where I feel like, yeah, I actually could probably do that. If it's the right thing to do, I'll lean into it, man. I love serving vets. Like every vet out there, if there's one thing, like they all have a measure of guilt that they carry too.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing to be able to serve my brothers and sisters in a way that mm-hmm. provides honest values makes me happy. It gives me a lot of peace that I wouldn't have otherwise in my life that have shown up in the past and created difficulties with growing my business. So in a lot of way, like honestly, guys, vet at VA is therapy.
That's cool.
I enjoy it. I enjoy doing something really good that most people wouldn't do, that have the amount of time that I put into it, mm-hmm. and at the end of the day, not getting anything out of it.
We're besties, man, right?
It's fun.
I love it.
I want to build that brand to take down every VA volume leader. I want to build that brand to take out every false pariah veteran logo that offers trust in the veteran consumers, you know.
And people are seeing it, though, man.
Garbage. I want to take all their heads off, not profit in the process, and leave it all smoking and laughing.
That's what's great about the newer type of consumer. They and it's making maybe your job easier or my job a bit easier. They're smelling out the bullshit, right?
Yeah.
They can see it. So, I mean, be careful out there.
It's easy to spot. Like our generation, you know when to scroll by.
Yeah. You know right when to scroll by. Have a good day.
Yeah.
They can feel it. And that's helping us out with the message that you're presenting. All right. One or two things. What can you tell? I don't care if it's someone in the mortgage industry, someone out there dealing with work-life balance, whatever you want to say, one or two things on what they should do to live their own life.
The first thing I'll tell everybody out there is if you're neglecting your family for the sake of your business, you're a fool. I don't mean to make you feel harmed or bad, and I'm a fool often, right? It doesn't make it right. If you're neglecting your family for the sake of your business, then you're neglecting your first love. Don't do it, guys. We all have a professional role, but we all have a purpose that's much higher than that, and the root of it's family. The societal problems that we all know and face today that are most common are caused because of the breakdown of the family unit, not because of bad mortgages, not because of a failure to do math very well from school. It's a failure to have real, true family values that are established, love, all of those things that really take to create a full-rounded human adult, right, that wants to go out into the world and encounter things and make them better. So don't neglect your family for your business. That's my first big takeaway. Another one you said?
Give me one more if you got it.
I think I'll stick with that one.
I love it.
Thanks, don't neglect bro. Your families for the sake of business,
I mean,
guys.
That's huge. I mean, we'll leave it right at that.
We've all read the book, right? Cleaners, mm-hmm. we all want to be cleaners mm-hmm. after reading that book. But what I'll tell you is if you're a cleaner in one category of your life and it's not your family, you're a towel boy. Family's the most important thing out there. If I had to walk away from everything today for the sake of saving my family, bye.
Have a good one. Well, on that, I love you, bro.
Love you too.
Thank
man.
You.
Enjoy it.
Chris Griffith, that does deals. Thanks for listening to the Broker to Broker podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel so you don't miss a single episode. Head over to aimgroup.com/broker to broker and subscribe on any platform where you listen to podcasts.